recording me right now?
Yeah, I am.
I've had some tea, so I am a bit chatty, so it probably is a good time.
This is Drew on the phone with his mom. A few days ago, she was retelling something of a baffling story from when Drew was about 10.
Okay, so when you were a child, shortly after going through a divorce and becoming a single parent, I was having a difficult time meeting the bill. And so this one month, I remember in particular writing down what was due and what was needed, and then seeing what I had on hand and not having enough. And it was a night that I did this while you were asleep, and I wrote the figure that was needed down on the paper, and I circled it, and I prayed over it, and I just thought, God, you care about the sparrows and the birds, and, you know, that we wouldn't go without our needs being met. And it was maybe a few days later that I checked the mail.
And at this point, she gets an unusual letter from a friend.
We loved her, you know, and she loved us, and we sometimes go to lunch and all, but she certainly did not know that I had financial needs that month. And in the mailbox was a letter from her, which was very odd.
She opens the letter.
It was a note, a beautiful note with a check. And the note said that she had prayed, been woken up one night, and felt compelled by God to go to and get her checkbook. I'm going to start crying. It's so beautiful. And as she followed the prompting, after maybe an hour or two of not being able to go to sleep, she finally went to the table and got her checkbook. And she prayed over it, and she felt it was very specific that she was to write a check to me for this specific amount, and it was a really odd amount, like $182.11, some bizarre figure, and to send it to me. And she has no idea why, but when I looked at the check, it was exactly the amount that I had written down and circled to the penny. And I started crying, and I thought it was the most beautiful moment to know that truly that I could give it over to him, and he would provide and keep us and have the faith that, you know, he had heard, that God had heard my prayer.
To Drew's mom, this isn't just a story.
It's a true moment of evidence of faith, you know. Evidence, something tangible and real that goes beyond explanation, you know, beyond reason, beyond coincidence.
I can't help but be moved by this story. It's so powerful hearing it, and I can only imagine how powerful this would have been for Drew's mom, you know, as she's experiencing this. And I want to believe her, you know, but there's still a part of me that I can't help but be skeptical when I hear something like this.
Yeah. To be honest, I'm not even sure how to process stories like this. But I do remember a lot of this particular story pretty vividly, and there are others. I've been exposed to some pretty incredible stories of things like physical healing, answered prayer, and there's stories from a lot of people that I'm close to, people I trust.
That last part about people you trust is crucial, I think, too. It's hard to take these stories seriously sometimes, but it can be just as difficult to dismiss them if the person telling the story is someone close to us. Because then it's not just a stranger's story, it's a story from someone that we can trust. Now, I want to ask you, the listener, to consider your initial reaction to this story. Very likely you found yourself in one of two camps. The first camp is filled with those who just see this story as a coincidence. And the second camp is filled with those that see this experience as something more, maybe even a miracle. The interesting thing about this is that it is very similar to the way that scholars and historians, or the experts, respond to the various miracles surrounding Jesus' life and death. Basically, they either find them credible and plausible, or they don't.
It'd be a matter of faith. It's not a
right.
matter of history. And that's the point
no,
of the resurrection.
No, I think it's a matter of worldview.
Well, no, you have to have faith for it to be a miracle. And so the resurrection is not subject to historiographic proof.
This is agnostic historian Bart Ehrman and Christian historian Mike Lacona debating the resurrection of Jesus. They're going back and forth on whether a historian should even consider the possibility of a miracle in their research.
I think what we do is we look at the evidence and we try to let the facts speak for themselves. And the best explanation for that is that he actually rose from the dead.
Well, now
if you
moved,
want to leave the cause of the resurrection as a question mark, I'm fine with that.
No, you've moved from history to faith. So you can show historically that people claimed they saw him alive afterward. You can draw the conclusion that they probably believed it. But if you yourself agree that Jesus was raised from the dead, you're saying that is an act of God in history. And you've already agreed that historians don't invoke God when they come up with their explanations. So what you're doing is not history anymore. It's faith.
More than just disagreeing about history, historians like Ehrman and Lacona reach an impasse in terms of how they think that history should even be studied. And this stems from a much more basic question. Do miracles occur or not? So who's right here? Should we be open to the idea of a miracle, or should we simply rule them out of our investigation? The truth is that, all biases aside, there's really no obvious answer to this question. That's why digging into stories like this, even from my atheist perspective, is so critical. So again, which camp do you find yourself in, and why do you think that is? And how might your response change if the person telling this story was someone you trusted, someone you regarded as an intelligent, reasonable person? Understanding the way that individual biases like these influence our efforts to make sense of the world around us is going to be one of the many recurring themes in Hinge. How do we, and is it even possible to, get past these biases in order to find out what really happened all those years ago? Also, what does all this tell us about the supposed miracles relating to Jesus? Of course, even if miracles do sometimes occur now, this doesn't mean that Jesus rose from the dead 2,000 years ago. And likewise, if miracles don't occur now, well, that doesn't mean that they didn't occur 2,000 years ago either. But man, would it change the discussion if we could establish that even a single miracle has occurred. With this in mind, part of what we're doing for Hinge is gathering as many miracle claims as we can and then examining them together. A tumor being healed, blindness cured, even someone waking up after being dead for 3 hours. And doing this stuff together prevents either Drew or me from getting too comfortable in our respective camps. Do miracles occur or not? This is a question that cannot simply be avoided. We must tackle it head on.
That's it for now, guys, but we want to leave you with an important update. A couple of weeks ago, we launched a Kickstarter campaign for our main podcast, Hinge. In order to produce it at a high level, we need the time to gather hundreds of stories, talk to dozens of experts, and put it all together, as well as hire an audio engineer. Right now, we're at about 25% of our $20,000 goal, and we need your help to put us over the top. As part of the final push for the campaign, we're releasing 2 raw interviews with a couple of people we think you're going to find pretty fascinating. Michael Shermer, who's a science writer and founder of the Skeptic Society, and author Mike McHarg, also known as Science Mike, who wrote my favorite book from last year, Finding God in the Waves. Both have wrestled with questions of God in significant and compelling ways. Look for those episodes over the next week, and please consider giving to our Kickstarter campaign and share it with a specific friend or two, maybe some family members. You can find it by searching Hinge at kickstarter.com. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great week.
See you guys.